TRE. Talk Radio Europe.
9 minutes past 11, time to cross to the offices of ABTA in the UK, and it's Sean this morning. Good morning.
Morning, Bill.
And I say, Sean, you won't have heard earlier on, but we were having this big discussion about people's names, and we had a guest on called Sarah, and should it be Sarah? And then we played a Michael McIntyre sketch in which he discusses the whole thing, and in fact, you're mentioned in it. So you, of course, should be a Sian, shouldn't you?
Oh, of course. I don't think so. Well, my sister's called Sarah, and she gets incredibly annoyed.
Sarah with an H or Sarah with an A?
With an A. She gets incredibly annoyed if people call her Sarah.
Really?
Me, I've got lots of different pronunciations of Sean. My mother calls me Sean.
Yeah.
I've heard of Sian a couple of times, you're right, and even Shane once or twice, but I just stick with Sean, really. I'm not that fussed. It's the commonest one.
That's very funny, Sarah. So S-A-R-A, Sarah.
Yeah. Seriously, she won't talk to people if they call her Sarah.
That's very funny. Okay, we mentioned this morning, myself and Steph, that things are, I was going to say hotting up, but they're not hotting up. It's quite the opposite, actually, on the eastern seaboard of America.
Quite incredible weather they're having there at the moment, really. I haven't seen anything as extreme as that in my time at ABTA. Anyway, but the problem, obviously for local people is one thing, but there are still people going who are due to go over there for business trips, holidays, etc.
Yeah.
And certainly yesterday, most of the airports along the eastern seaboard were shut, not necessarily for long periods of time, but certainly for a period of time. And that's caused, I hate to use that word, but I'm going to have to use this now, it did cause travel chaos.
Yes.
Something like 3,000 flights were cancelled from the UK into America. It just goes to show just how busy we are and the amount of traffic that goes over at any time of the year. But because of that, though, we were getting lots of calls from members of the public asking what their rights were.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, very quickly, running through it very, very quickly. First of all, obviously, the airline does have to, at the very least, give you a refund of the cost of your ticket. What they generally will do is offer you the chance to actually rebook. And usually, if they've had disruption, things can, cross fingers, get back to normal quite quickly.
Yep.
So you have that option, money back, or more likely a rebooking. If you're over in America at the moment, and there would have been people, thousands of people in that position who missed their flights. Now, this is quite interesting, really. I think we've talked before, haven't we, about your rights under the EU Regulation 261, whereby the airline has to provide you with food, refreshments, if need be, pay for you to stay in a hotel until they can get you back home.
Yep.
Now, that doesn't apply necessarily in this case, because it's an EU regulation. It only applies if your airline is based in the EU, so like British Airways, for example, Air France, Alitalia, Iberia, or alternatively if the problem occurs in the EU. But there will be a lot of people in America now who didn't fly out with British Airways or an EU-based airline, something like American Airlines or Delta, apply.
Oh.
If you're stuck over in New York with an American airline, that EU regulation is totally irrelevant. It's just a question of what the airline chooses to do in terms of looking after you. In my experience, American Airlines will do the bare minimum, really. They certainly would have to get you home, but they don't have to pay for your hotel. They don't have to pay for food and drink. So there's going to be a lot of people out of pocket on that one. And I don't think they're necessarily aware of that, and they'll find out the hard way. The other issue as well is sometimes when you book, let's say, a ticket with an EU-based airline, they'll do a thing called a code share.
Yep.
Well, they might put you on a different airline. Now, if that happens, let's say they've stuck you on an American airline, even though you think you're flying out with an EU-based airline once more, the obligation is not on the airline you bought the ticket from. It's from the airline who actually carried you out. Does that make sense?
Oh, okay.
Again, you might think you're traveling with an EU-based airline, but if you're not in reality, then once more, they don't have any obligation to look after you. So I think that's something to bear in mind when you see a code share, that if you want that cover of the EU regulation, you maybe think twice about booking the ticket because you won't have that cover.
I didn't know that.
I know. It's something I came across fairly recently. That's why I thought I'd bring it up this time, actually.
So to be clear, you book your ticket with BA. Stick you on American
Delta,
Airlines, Delta,
right.
Or whoever it is that their code share passenger.
American, you're right, yeah.
Therefore, the EU law does not apply because even though you booked it with a BA, which is a European airline, you've actually been bumped onto a different airline which isn't European.
Exactly, spot on. Yeah, this is something I came across, I said, a couple of weeks ago, and I thought I wasn't aware of it myself either, but it is definitely the case. The regulation is quite clear about that. Also, the other side of this is there will be people who book package holidays as well. Now, if they can't travel, the tour operator is legally obliged, and they'll do it anyway, just to either let you rebook with them, go somewhere else, or have a full refund of your money. But people who haven't booked packages, and I'd say probably the majority of people travelling to New York, for example, will not be on packages. They'll be making their own arrangements. If they're not able to get out there and they've booked their hotels, car hire, whatever it is, separately. If they don't use that, they'll be hit with cancellation charges for that. And that's once really is an issue whether you're covered by your insurance for that. Sometimes you are, sometimes you're not. So certainly if you are thinking of travelling at this time of year where weather disruption is not unusual, I think you should think long and hard if you're not booking a package holiday but the kind of travel insurance you have, and make sure you have one that covers you for potential cancellation fees if you can't go.
Otherwise
you'll be out of pocket once more.
And if you're sat on the ground waiting to depart and they're saying the weather's bad and you're stuck on the aircraft, don't do what the guy in Malaga did this week and get out walk out onto the wing.
I've been tempted to do that myself a couple of times. But I believe he's going to be hit with a £40,000 fine for that. So whether he can afford to pay it is a different matter. But anyway, there we are.
Are you doing it? Well, that would be a great headline, wouldn't it?
It wouldn't it, Jeff?
Now, talking of airlines, and as a pilot, I'm delighted to see that 2017 was the safest year ever. This is an extraordinary bit of good news.
If you look at the number of flights that are taken around the world each year, I mean, they're in the millions, really. Yeah. And if you, obviously, every time a plane crashes or something awful like that happens, it's front page news, it's incredibly dramatic. But the fact is that it happens so rarely. I think they should be, you know, the people who designed the aircraft, the people that run them, I think they've got a lot to be proud of.
Absolutely.
That the safety record for flying is just unbelievable compared to other forms of transport.
Yeah.
And this year, it was the safest ever. Obviously one death is one too many, but even so, the nature of the world, accidents can and do occur. So only 44 people were killed in aviation accidents last year. And that's an incredible figure when you look at the amount of trips that are taken. And I've seen the flights that are affected. Most of those were cargo flights or turboprop planes, slightly smaller planes rather than large airliners that we all fly on. So really good news. And I hope anybody listening who's a nervous flyer, just really, you know, think about that. You know, it is incredibly safe way of travelling. You're much more likely to have an accident, I believe the statistic is, on the way to the airport than you are actually on the flight. So I know, you know, when you go through turbulence, you're like, oh, God, what's going on?
Yeah.
But actually, it's incredibly safe. It really is. So if you are a nervous flyer, just bear that in mind and don't worry.
Yes. Well done, the airline. Industry.
Well, indeed. Well done, too.
Fantastic. And finally, this is an interesting one, actually. When we go on a long-haul trip, we generally expect there to be some kind of IFE, in-flight entertainment. So the acronym, Sean, you see. And, of course, that's not necessarily a great thing these days because people are taking their own devices on board
exactly,
with them.
Yeah, exactly. The in-flight entertainment modules, they're actually very expensive for airlines to fit. And on the larger aircraft, I think the figure's on like £2 million.
And they're heavy.
They're heavy, exactly, and also they need to be updated on a fairly regular basis. We're quite fussy about that. We want state-of-the-art equipment, so quite a big expense for airlines. But a lot of them notice, and I certainly do this, I'm sure you do as well, more and more people, they're not using them. They're just coming up, they're using their iPads, their, you know, whatever kind of device they have, they're watching, they're looking on their smartphones, so they're not using them. So a lot of them are thinking, like, well, why do we provide these then? They cost us a lot of money. They, in terms of, because they weigh so much, obviously that adds to the fuel burden as well, and the cost there. So quite a few airlines are now just taking them out. So I'm not saying everybody will be doing that. It seems to be a mixed bag, but certainly quite a few of the American-based airlines are doing precisely that, removing them. And I think, is it a shame, really? I remember years and years ago, before we had iPads, a long-haul flight were a bit of a nightmare. I remember going to New Zealand once. It was so boring, 36 hours, with a book to keep me company. But, so it was great when they started bringing in these systems. But I think now maybe we might be seeing the end of them because of the fact that people just don't need them anymore.
Yeah.
So interesting, but I don't think they're going to disappear overnight, but I'd say probably in maybe 5-10 years time, I don't think many airlines will have them.
I personally, it's only a personal thing, I use an iPad on and watch a movie or whatever on the app, but I actually like looking at where you are, so I like the detail of the flight, so little maps that come up and the speed
like
and the, love all that. I absolutely love all that. And I tell you what I really was impressed with, that I flew with Turkish Airlines back from Bangkok to
very good airline.
They had on the little in-flight entertainment, you were able to see two camera views, one from down from the front and one like a vertical view and a horizontal view, basically. So you could see where you were going and see the landing as you were from the pilot's view, which was wonderful.
So back to the nervous flyers, I don't think they'd appreciate it.
No, and actually they were showing it on the big screens. You know, they have the big ones where the people have got no leg room. They were showing it on there, so maybe you're right.
A few people screaming.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean, a pleasure as always. We'll speak to you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.